At a First Unitarian in Denver, we've been doing sanctuary work for a couple of years now in a very public way, giving me occasion to speak in public many times at the State House and interfaith gatherings and so on and so forth. So the prayer I'm going to share with you right now is one that I have shared at interfaith gatherings on many occasions. There is only one life. That life is God's life. And we who are gathered here, who live on this good earth, we who laugh and cry and mourn and celebrate, as people of faith, we are called to support the families that are the foundation of our common life. And though we might call God by many names, we are called to work together for the betterment of all, to create together the world of our most noble spiritual traditions, to allow the Spirit of God to be made real through the truth of our voices, the work of our hands, the love we allow to claim us. And that is why we are here. There are senseless forces seeking to break apart loving families, seeking to separate loving husbands, wives, partners from each other and from their children. This community of faith believes in families and the love that holds them together. This community of faith believes that separating families is a grave injustice. We know that our fate, our destiny, our salvation in this life are tied up with the fate, the destiny, and the salvation of immigrants and the undocumented. There is no us and them. There is only us working together, praying together, sharing the same air, the same food, the same life that is God's life, hoping together, seeking together, working together for a future where none need live in fear. Let me tell you a short story about why I'm here. First Unitarian Denver, the downtown church I am proud to serve, got involved in immigration justice about 6 years ago. For about 2 years, our immigration justice project held forums and brought in guest speakers and facilitated classes with our ministerial interns. We visited legislators. We provided letter writing opportunities for the church. We worked immigration justice into the religious exploration program with the children. We lobbied at the state capitol, created Sunday worship and Wednesday Vesper services, hosted film and book discussion groups, attended monthly vigils at the Immigration Detention Center. We developed working relationships with the American Friends Service Committee and the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, El Centro Humanitario, the Denver Dreamers, and many more. And all that time, offering sanctuary to someone wasn't even on our radar screen. Until January of 2014, and because of the partnerships that we had formed with Colorado Immigration Rights Coalition and American Friends Service Committee, they approached us one day. They called us, Jennifer Piper, in fact, called me and said, would we take someone into sanctuary? Would we allow them to move into our building with their family? Would we offer them the protection of our church and our faith? Oh, and could you give us an answer within a week? Oh, and we can't tell you who it is, because their lawyer doesn't want anyone to know until after they move in. Yeah. So the board met 2 days later, and we talked it over, and we had so many questions. So many questions. But they were faithful people, and they really wanted to be good partners, and they said yes. We would do it provisionally for 3 months, and during that time, we would educate, engage the congregation to see if we would continue beyond that time. Now, that individual, who had been scheduled to be deported 10 days later, received a stay of deportation and did not move in, and thank God, if there is one, because we were so very not ready. We had no idea what having someone in sanctuary would mean. We would learn that, but that would come later. At that time, we would have really been going out on a limb. But that's what started the conversation at First Unitarian Denver. And we went into about 5 months of discernment, similar, it sounds like, to what you have been doing here. The board and I took some heat for having made a decision and having said yes at that meeting in January without a congregational process. But after that, we got an attorney to advise and represent us. We consulted with the city about zoning. We had long conversations with and about our insurance carrier. We debated what room someone might live in and how many children we could handle and what would they do all day stuck in the church. And weren't there other things we could do with our time and energy that would have a wider effect on immigration policy than helping a single family when there are millions of people facing deportation? And what if they move in and decide they don't like us? And what if they move in and we decide we don't like them? And like, who would have the authority to kick them out if it, for some reason, wasn't working? On and on and on. I can't say enough about the people who worked and met and held the forums and answered the questions and did the homework and spent the time to process and listen to all the people who had doubts and who disapproved. I cannot say enough about them. I think your folks are right here. God bless you guys. That June, the congregation voted 74% in favor of being a sanctuary church, and my personal feeling is that I think we were moving in the direction of yes, but I think, in my observation, the tide really turned, and we were solidly moving towards yes when one of our African-American members, a longtime racial justice advocate, stood up at the microphone, and she said she hoped there would be a positive vote, but she did not expect there to be a positive vote because in her experience, Unitarian Universalists like to talk a lot about justice, but they turn away whenever there was an actual risk involved. It was a poignant moment. That August, we kicked off the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition, and that October, Arturo Hernandez Garcia moved in to our church. Now, if you have not been following immigration justice and haven't been part of this work, you might be asking yourself, why on earth is this so important? What has this got to do with Foothills Unitarian or with you? At the risk of oversimplifying a very complex reality and borrowing some from my colleague, Reverend Kendall Gibbons, I want to give you some background on immigration, the issue of immigration, because it's important that what you're considering in being sanctuary, it's important you understand the context of this stuff. There are three overriding flaws in our current immigration system, flaws that produce untold human suffering. The first great flaw, perhaps the essential flaw from which all the other flaws derive, is the way current law fails to allow or account for temporary workers in our country. Fails. There are millions of seasonal and temporary workers who come to the United States for jobs that very few native citizens want, but for which many immigrants represent real prosperity. These workers are an essential part of the economy, and every single one of us relies upon them. Every one of us. However, by severely limiting the number and type of workers allowed to enter the country legally, workers that companies and the economy need, the current system makes it inevitable that workers without documentation will immigrate to seek those jobs, and that employers will circumvent the law to hire them. This is basic economics, right? Supply and demand. It's going to happen. This creates a system in which abuse is inevitable. I can't say that strongly enough. Undocumented workers often face unrealistic hours or productivity requirements, dangerous working conditions, unfair wages, underpayment for their work, abusive bosses, or other conditions that employers get away with for the simple reason that they can. Undocumented workers have no recourse, and everyone knows it. They cannot organize. They cannot seek the protection of labor laws. They cannot seek the protection of occupational safety laws. They cannot seek the protection of anti-discrimination laws. Wage theft, where employers pay less than promised or sometimes not at all, is a huge problem in the immigrant community, and I don't know a single undocumented person who has not been a victim of wage theft. They go work for 2-3 weeks, and then the employer says, thanks. No check. And as I tell people who think that all these immigrants should be deported, they're usually men, not always. Dude, it's too late. Flat out. You are already in relationship with these people. If you have eaten food, is that most of you, I think? If you have stayed in a hotel room, if you've been inside a building built in the last 40 years, or any number of other economic activities, these people are already a part of your community. There is no us and them. Cannot be clearer about that. The second major flaw in our system is that we do not adequately recognize families on either end, the incoming immigrants or the outgoing immigrants. We do not adequately recognize families. The process by which families might come here to work legally is arcane. It is backlogged to the point of absurdity. I'm talking decades. I'm not exaggerating. Decades. It forces spouses and parents to separate from their families for unspecified periods. It actually prohibits visiting, since migrant workers can't leave the country without losing their visas, and families can't enter, not even for a vacation, if someone is here on a worker visa. On the other end, if someone has been living here, working here, paying taxes, raising their family, even if they've been here for decades, even if they are married to a United States citizen, even if they have children who are United States citizens, even though our contradictory systems makes it impossible for them to apply to become citizens, they can be forcibly separated from their lives and their families and deported. This is a catch-22 for millions of hardworking families. It makes no sense from any reasonable perspective. Which brings me to the third element, broken element of existing policy, and that is the arbitrary, random, inhumane, unjust ways in which enforcement takes place. There's no particular reason you would know this, but I've been working on this for a while, and I can tell you the laws as they are currently written give Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency unbelievable latitude in what they do, in who they arrest and how they arrest and who they deport and how they do it. There is almost zero accountability Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they use jails and detention centers whether or not someone has committed a crime. Those in detention can be denied bond. They can be deported without a hearing. The system is rampant with stories of how non-criminals, I'm talking hundreds of thousands of people, have been subject to strip searching, shackling, solitary confinement, lack of access to telephones, mail and legal resources, verbal, physical, and sexual abuse, no consideration for the families they might be supporting, no recourse. This is the country we live in. Between 2005 and 2008, 66 people died while being held in ICE custody, mostly from lack of medical care. This kind of enforcement completely fails to address the basic issues of immigration, completely fails to address the need for workers, the rights of workers, the health of our communities, or even national security. Don't let them fool you with that bogus argument. These policies and their arbitrary enforcement only make the inadequacies of the current system more tragic and highlight the urgency of a more rational and just approach to immigration. And here's the thing. This is so easy to fix. I can't say that strongly enough either. This is so easy to fix. Congress knows exactly what to do. They know exactly how to do it, but they have managed to avoid or ignore this issue for 31 years. Democrats and Republicans, there's no particular villains in this thing, right? The last time we had serious immigration reform was 1986. And the details are, of course, need to be worked out, but no sensible or informed person could possibly deny the mess and the injustice that currently exists. And because it's important, and because you should know this stuff, I'm going to give you a very, very brief primer, if you will, on the essential moral components of immigration reform. We need a reasonable, timely path to citizenship for millions of workers who are already here. Number one, it is the only humane and sensible thing to do. We should set clear humanitarian goals by giving priorities to keeping families together and to refugees who are fleeing persecution and, in many cases, certain death. That does not mean we just open the door for 500 million people from every country on earth that's having a war right now. It just says how we would morally choose our immigration priorities. Three, we desperately need to streamline and restructure programs for temporary workers, including the rights of those workers to have a living wage and to organize if they choose. It's the only human and sensible thing to do. Four, we should protect the most vulnerable sectors of workers from an influx of low-wage competition. This is a sensible policy. It's much more difficult, but knowledgeable people assure me it is possible. Five, we should protect the basic human rights of everyone who lives on our soil. Everyone. I'm going to repeat that. We should protect the human rights of everyone who lives on our soil. I don't even know why that's a point of discussion. Lastly, we should match immigration flow as close as possible to what the country and the economy reasonably needs and can reasonably sustain so that we don't end up once again 10 years from now with another broken system that hurts everyone. All right. Did you get all that? I'm kidding. But I'm also making the point that to me, and I dearly hope this will be true for you, understand that sanctuary is about much more than helping an individual or an individual family. For me, part of the reason of doing sanctuary is to do it very publicly. To put real faces, real people, real stories in people's minds and understand that these are our neighbors. These are the people who work on your lawns. These are people who clean your hotel rooms, cook your meals, pick your food, drive the trucks, and so on and so on and so on. These people are us. We do this publicly so ultimately we can put pressure on Congress to do its damn job. Amen?
Amen.
Thank you. Now, I want to come back to the very specific issue of providing sanctuary for someone facing deportation, because I know this is what you are considering. And I know I was invited to come this morning to share some of what we learned at First Unitarian Denver, having done this twice with two very different people. First, I'm here to tell you it's hard. And I'm not kidding. It is hard in ways that it's hard to anticipate. It is a major undertaking for a congregation. And please don't do it if you're not prepared to see it through. It will stretch your resources of time and energy. There will be lawyers, and there will be hearings, and there will be ups and downs to people's individual cases. You will get to intimately know someone whose life experience is almost certainly radically different from your own life experience. Second, don't even think about going this alone. Don't even think about it. You would be nuts. I cannot say this strongly enough. You need community partners. You need the support and the trust of organizations who know the immigrant community and know immigrant issues. My experience is that that trust needs to be earned, and you earn that trust by showing up. And you show up over and over and over and over again until that trust is earned. And you and them have had conversations about your life and their life and your motivation and theirs and your faith and their faith. And you have these conversations while you're waiting outside of courtrooms or at a vigil or at the office of your legislators or while shopping for food or doing the laundry for the family that you are supporting. One that's, in my experience, is pretty hard for Unitarian Universalists. You need to understand that you will not be in charge. The whole premise of sanctuary, walking with the immigrant community, is that they are in charge. You are not facing deportation. They are facing deportation. It's their case, it's their family, it's their life, and they call the shots. For those of you of a certain age, right, they are Gladys Knight. We get to be the Pips. We move to their beat, not the other way around. Fourth, you need to know that people who are living in sanctuary are people who are living under enormous stress, enormous personal stress. When Arturo was with us for 9 months, about 4 months in, there was a major setback in his case. And Arturo, who is one of the strongest, kindest, most grounded, most honorable men I have ever met in my life, and I don't say that lightly, got seriously depressed. And who could blame him? I ask you to just imagine, if you will, imagine living inside this building, not being able to go outside, not being able to be with your family, not being able to work for months on end, worried that if you did leave, even onto the sidewalk down there, you would be arrested and deported someplace thousands of miles away, not knowing if there would ever be any light at the end of this tunnel, essentially living in a prison. Imagine, enormous stress. And you know, people who are seriously depressed, even if you love them even if you love them dearly, are pretty hard to be around. Yes? Right? They need things you cannot give them. They become short-tempered and irritable, even the best of us. They don't always make good decisions. And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just sharing with you that this is bigger and harder and more intimate and more demanding than you might think. You should know this stuff. One other thing we learned that I'll take the time to share with you, and then I really need to wrap up here. And I'm speaking personally here, but I believe I'm also speaking for a very large segment of the congregation I serve. Right? So I am a poster boy for white male privilege. I am resourceful, I am connected, and I am loud. I know how to get my legislators' attention. I know how to cut through bureaucracy to get to the boss. And when I'm talking to the boss, I know how to have that communication to steer the conversation where I want and towards the results that I'm after. This was the first time in my adult life where I ran up against a system, an agency of my own government that was not only indifferent but actually hostile to me. And I got, and to some extent, our whole congregation got, just a little taste of what immigrants and people of color and other marginalized communities face every single day as they try to live in this country. It was a real education. It was unfamiliar to this straight white man. It was frustrating. It was profoundly humbling. And I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. Because I'm here to tell you, as a matter of faith, as a matter of principle, as a matter of fact, no matter what the Trump administration may tell you, there is no us in them. There is no us in them. There is only us. All of us, and the fate of the immigrant community, of which you are already a part, is the fate of us all. And that's the truth. Amen.